Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and on this podcast, we offer our expert advice so you can have an extraordinary sex life. You can find a complete podcast archive over at pleasuremechanics.com, where you will also find a beautiful page at pleasuremechanics.com/hello, where you can record us a message to suggest a topic for a future podcast, answer a question, or give us feedback on a podcast you have listened to. We love hearing from you. On last week's episode, just after the election, we shared with you our feelings and our emotional state about the election and tried to remind us all that, you know, we're all in it together, meaning especially when it comes to sexuality and relationships, we all need to strive towards a world where we have more celebration of sexual diversity and more permission to have our own unique sex lives, and that the shaming and judgment and fear-mongering around sexuality really damages all of us, and it doesn't help anyone to elevate certain privileged groups over others, etc., etc. And doing a little better this week, but we need to remain vigilant around this administration and make sure that our own sexual rights and rights as sexual minorities are intact. It's going to be a fight for the long haul. How are you doing?
I did some candlelit dancing and crying last night.
Emotional purging.
Yes, while once you and our kid was asleep. So I'm trying to take some time for self-care and...
A topic for another episode.
Yeah.
Sexual self-care in times of turmoil. But we promised you that we were going to get back into something fun and kinky, and I was trying to think about how to dovetail these two episodes and how to go from our kind of emotional trauma state of last week into offering sex advice again. And I was thinking about fetishes, because fetishes are an area where there's a lot of misunderstanding, and a lot of us hold secret desires and shame around these areas of our sexuality that we don't understand. And so in the spirit of shedding light on areas that hold a lot of secrecy and privacy and shame and try to alleviate that shame and reassure us all that when it comes to sexuality, the only normal is a little bit abnormal. The only normal is that there is no normal. Sexual diversity is the name of the game. Even if you're heterosexual, what that means, what that looks like, your desires, your fantasies, the kind of sex you like to have, how often you like to have it, what you think about while you have sex, is your own unique thumbprint. You are a unique sexual snowflake, my dear. And so when people write to us and they have a lot of shame and fear around this thing that they think makes them abnormal or wrong or perverted or twisted, we have to constantly reassure people that all of these things are perfectly normal and you are not alone. And even fetishes that seem so out there, when you turn to the internet, there are communities of millions of people who all share this sexual interest. And so I thought today we'd talk about fetishes and kind of encourage each of us to start thinking about what's your fetish. But maybe we should start by talking about what is a fetish.
The dictionary says it is an inanimate object worshipped for its supposed magical powers or because it is considered to be inhabited by a spirit.
Or in sexual terms,
a form of sexual desire in which gratification is linked to an abnormal degree to a particular object, item of clothing, part of the body, etc.
So let's look at these two definitions. So you often see the word fetish when it comes to describing like tribal spirituality or non-Christian spirituality, in talking about sculptures or objects that people believe are inhabited by spirits or have a spiritual significance and therefore are worshipped. So it was kind of a colonial term for looking at spiritual objects, although Christianity has its own fetishes, crosses, beads, etc. And then this term got co-opted by sexology to describe sexuality that is focused on objects or parts of the body. And even in the dictionary definition, they say is linked to an abnormal degree.
Yeah, judgment abound already.
And if you look in the DSM, the psychology manual, you'll find that fetishes are also described as an abnormality. And this is the way sexuality has been used against us over time. We have divided sexuality into normal and abnormal, what's healthy and unhealthy, what can be diagnosed and treated versus what is just natural. And this is all bullshit, as you know, if you've been listening to this podcast, of course. So this idea that objects or body parts can have an extraordinary amount of power to arouse someone. That's how we want to define a fetish. A fetish is any object or thing or body part when taken in isolation of the rest of the body that turns you on to an extraordinary degree. It kind of, it's not, you know, oh yes, I like seeing my lady in high heels. High heels are pretty. That's not really a fetish. A fetish is when your woman walks in high heels and you immediately get aroused and you want to rub up against those high heels and lick the high heels and see the high heels as you're having sex, where the high heels become a central part of your arousal cycle and a central part of your sexual desire. Right? And so we all have things that turn us on and preferences. Like, I like it when ladies wear lace stockings, but that doesn't necessarily make it a fetish. Fetishes are these heightened degrees of arousal that hold power beyond other objects or body parts.
So there's an extreme intensity, and they themselves become an object of desire.
Right. And sometimes this can be separated by the person. That's also, like, some men will masturbate to high heels in isolation of a woman, and sometimes it needs to be part of a sexual experience with another person. And fetishes have been really misunderstood. Often they're kind of combined with kinky sex. And for the purposes of this podcast, I want to make the differentiation between fetishes, which is arousal around a particular object or body part, versus kinky sex, which is arousal around specific activities, behaviors, sensations. I just think it's useful to pull them apart and look at fetishes as separate from kink, because when we think of kink, we think of intense sensations and spanking and bondage and power play. And fetishes can overlap. There's that lovely Venn diagram of kink and fetishes, but sometimes fetishes are actually really playful and have nothing to do with erotic power play and can be really lighthearted and don't have a lot to do with sensation. It's really this mental trip around an object. So I think it's useful to pull them apart and start thinking about, if you had a fetish, what would it be? Like, what if we came to this from this idea that we all have a fetish of some sort to a certain power, to a certain degree? And what if it was a game show to identify 1 to 3 objects that turned you on more than any other objects? I think that's a useful place to come from it, because it ends the question of, like, I have a fetish that makes me super abnormal and weird, and puts it more in the category of, there are things that turn all of us humans on. And what's so interesting and quirky and fascinating about sexuality is that amazing range of diversity. That it can be anything from high heels to balloons, from cigars to pretending to be a puppy. But the idea is that it's so amazing, the range of fetishes that exist, and I never tire of hearing about people's specific fetishes. And I also never tire of being able to tell people, oh yeah, I've heard that one before, and their eyes widen and they have this sense of disbelief. Because if they haven't sought online community around their fetish, there's a really strong sense of, I must be the only one in the world that this weird thing turns me on.
And I must be a freak.
Yeah. And what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
And so let's look at, where do fetishes come from? Because a lot of people, that's their first question is, why would this turn me on? Why is this such a central part of my sexuality? And again, the fun and fascinating answer is, we don't know.
Question mark.
There's been all sorts of studies looking into the roots of fetishes, where people, and the most common idea is that it's some childhood event that triggers an unusual emotional intensity and therefore gives you this neural link to excitement, arousal, and then that's translated into your sexuality. So maybe your mom was wearing high heels when she spanked you that one time, and you were looking at the high heels as you were over her lap, and that intensity of that experience imprinted something on you. And some people with fetishes report childhood experiences that they have made a cognitive link around their fetish to, but others, they have no idea where it came from. And something like squishing a burrito in a sneaker has nothing to do with their childhood. And yes, this is a real fetish. We'll get to it later. And yet it creates this massive turn on. Why? We don't know. And maybe it doesn't matter. What is the root of asking this question? Why does it turn me on?
The fact is, it might just turn you on, and the experience is true, and you know it in your body that there is this intensity and this charge, and
why not use it?
Why not just accept it and acknowledge it? And
do you think people's quest to understand the root has to do with alleviating shame?
I think partly, and I think that humans are just curious, and it's like, this is odd in our world. We consider this odd, and so how do we understand it? I think we always just want to understand things.
But that comes from the perception that it's odd, right? If we came from the perception of humans are strange sexual animals and all of these different things turn us on, if that was our root understanding of sexuality, maybe we wouldn't be as invested in the why.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a lovely idea.
So that's where we want to come from, because we have talked to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people about their sexuality. And the only thing that surprises me anymore is that people think that they're alone. People think that they're abnormal, because what we've seen by getting up close and personal with so many people's sexual lives is that everyone is super unique and have these constellations of turn-ons, and we all get to be our own erotic beings. And this includes owning your fetishes. So let's look at some of the patterns around fetishes. And as we talk about these things, notice if anything comes to mind. Notice if you're like, oh, that doesn't turn me on, but it kind of seems a little bit like this, which I've always been curious about. Or notice if in your fantasies there are any recurrent patterns that you might be able to identify as your fetish. And it could be fetish light of, you know, that kind of turns me on, to a very heavy fetish where you wish it was part of your sexual experience more often. And at the end of the episode, we're going to give you some tools to start conversations with your lovers about how to perhaps integrate your fetishes into your sex life in really safe, easy, accessible ways. So when it comes to fetishes, there are no scientific studies that give you a chart of the most popular fetishes. What we know about popular fetishes and common fetishes partly comes to us through reporting, informal reporting. It comes to us through the kink communities online and what's most popular there, what shows up in pornography most often. So we have a sense of some of the recurrent themes of people's fetishes. But as we'll give a few examples of, there are fetishes that are so specific and so interesting in how specific they are that perhaps there's no online forum about them, but that doesn't make them any less valid or any more abnormal than the common ones. You know what I mean? It's like there's common and there's very unique, and it all works.
It's all okay.
So some of the common themes are food. Some people have very specific fetishes around specific food items, and that could be how they look, how they taste, incorporating them into sex.
Are there any examples?
There are the phallic foods, right? Like some people get very turned on by bringing cucumbers, carrots, that kind of thing. There are the foods like whipped cream and chocolate sauce that some people get really attached to. But I've heard people's reports of, maybe I'll give the burrito example right away. I knew a guy whose entire fetish was to have people put a burrito in a sneaker and then squish it with their foot and describe the sensations as they hit each individual ingredient. Right? So the whole fetish was around the burrito and procuring the burrito and going and buying that burrito and then choosing the sneaker that it will be smushed in. It was this whole ritual around it. And it was specific to burritos. It was specific to having the person describe it. Like, he didn't actually squish the burrito. So it wasn't about the sensations. It was about watching someone else do it and hearing them talk about it. How's that for unique snowflake? I've also known people who have, like, fruit fetishes, that ripe fruit and the act of eating ripe fruit was super erotic for them, and they just really got off on it, and watching someone bite into a peach and seeing juice on their chin, like, would send them into orbit, right? So food, makes sense. It's a sensual thing. It's part of people's sexualities, but some people, a specific food or a specific act with food really gets them hard.
Or wet.
Or both.
Or hot and wet. Body parts are another very common theme that people may experience mild interest, strong interest, or intense desire for. And feet are a really, really common one. We did a podcast. We interviewed somebody who had a foot fetish in this, so that is in our archive. It was a really interesting podcast, and he really made it sound incredibly appealing.
Yeah. The more he talked about it, like, all right, I can see that. Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of hearing other people's stories, is really getting a sense of what's in their mind. Like, why is this such a turn on?
You can find that episode by going to pleasuremechanics.com and then using the sex index and looking for foot fetish, and you'll find that interview. It was a really interesting conversation.
Totally. But feet is a very common one.
It's one of the most common fetishes.
And there's some theory that it's because it's really close in the brain to the sexual part of the brain, and so there's just like a little bit of neural...
Trying to explain these things.
But who knows? But it is extremely common.
Other body parts like butts and breasts, of course, make their appearances on the fetish map. But also interesting things like ears, and seeing ears and earlobes, or hands are a very common one. You can see all these different fetishes turn up in online porn. And again, it's not just this sense of like, yeah, I like a woman with nice breasts. It's an overwhelming attraction and arousal when breasts enter the picture, and a fixation on the breasts as an isolated part of the body. And really, any body part can have its role here. I once knew someone in college whose fetish was belly hair. He was a heterosexual guy, but he really loved women with belly hair. And he really loved like rubbing his penis on it and the coarseness of it. And really liked when they had big pubic hair and he could trail from the belly hair to the pubic hair. And he loved ejaculating in the belly hair. And his whole obsession was on belly hair on women.
So interesting.
I also knew a guy in college whose obsession was with women with shaved heads, who also happened to be a heterosexual. And so we had this great conversation because at one point in college, I shaved my head. And for me, it was part of being queer and coming out as butch and kind of my more masculine identity. And he got really turned on by it and kind of came to me and asked if I was into guys and if he could watch me shave my head, and kind of came out to me around this fetish. And you know, I was known as a sex person on campus. I ran the porn magazine, so it was a safe conversation for him to have. But we ended up in this whole conversation because it was really hard for him to find women to participate in this because so few heterosexual women were willing to shave their head.
Fascinating.
Yeah. So body parts and what we do with our body parts are a huge part of the fetish galaxy.
And then there's clothing and textures of clothing. So latex, leather, stockings, silk underwear for men and women can be just incredibly charged.
And sometimes this is about the appearance. And especially in Europe, there's a huge community around latex clothing. And people spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on latex outfits and then go to sex events where it's not about doing anything sexual. It's about showing up in this costume, these latex outfits, and like embodying that. And there's a huge fetish community around that. There's also the whole leather community, which again, it has a Venn diagram with kinkiness and what we do and how we play. But for some people, just this texture of leather, the smell of leather, the feeling of leather on skin in and of itself is a huge turn on. So I think this is a really interesting one when it gets to like textiles and how we wear them and what they signify. And for a lot of men, women's textiles, silk, satin, sheer stockings, become a fetish when they put them on. Mm-hmm. So there's one thing, a fetish of seeing someone else in a specific textile, and there's another about putting it on yourself. And especially when there is a taboo element of that, which leather has its own taboo, but men wearing panties, silk stockings, wearing satin, feeling that is a huge, huge fetish. And a lot of guys have a lot of anxiety around this because they think it means they're queer in some way. It makes them homosexual in some way because it's feminizing. When a lot of these guys are super macho dudes, super heterosexual, but just love the sensation and the appearance of their hard cock and silk panties. And they have so much stress about this and so much anxiety. And this is one where a lot of couples, when it's revealed, they can play and it can be a really fun part of their sex life. And it doesn't have to be threatening at all, but just the perception about it and what it means about them as a person and their sexuality often blocks it from being introduced into the relationship and causes so much internal shame and self-hatred. It can become really toxic. So I think this is a good example of when we try to understand what it means instead of just accepting it as part of our sexuality and integrating it as part of our sexuality, it can become really toxic instead of becoming a source of fun and pleasure and eroticism and arousal for both you and your partner.
And this is where it's really important to have those conversations if you can be brave enough. And
we're going to get into that.
Okay.
Hold your thoughts.
Okay.
Let's get through a few more. We can zip zoom if you want.
Zip zoom.
So body functions and bodily fluids, menstrual blood.
Urine.
Spit.
Sweat.
Even boogers.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, everyone's...
Even earwax. I'm not going to make up a story. I have not met someone who fetishizes earwax. If you're out there, I'd love to hear from you. But I know so many people who all the other bodily functions, and we didn't mention poop, now I did, but they all have their place in the fetish galaxy. And again, we are told that menstrual blood is dirty, it's gross. A lot of guys love fucking a woman when she's on her period. A lot of women love sex during that time. And if you can have that conversation and get past the cultural baggage that it's yucky, and you can get past the safe sex concerns and you manage that wisely, it can become a great part of your sex life. Same thing with sweat. Like, do you want to sniff your guy's armpit after he comes from the gym? Like, that's really hot for a lot of people. It's tons of pheromones in there. Like, maybe there's a biological reason this is attractive to people. And again, there doesn't need to be a reason. What bodily functions turn you on, even if culture tells you that it's a little gross?
Poop, though, there are some safety risks that you should explore. Yes. And if you're into that, please figure out the safety things. All the rest of them really don't have any.
Well, you know, spit, you can transmit a cold, but yes. Poop is its own category.
Yeah, we'll leave that one aside for now. Yeah. Acting like a puppy or a pony or a pig, these sorts of role-playing or embodying of certain...
Animals
is really a thing for people.
And this is one, again, that Venn diagram between behavior, kinky sex versus the object. And I kind of included this because for some people it's about the objects around that animal. So a puppy bed, a leash, a dog bowl, those kinds of things. And other people it's much more behavior related and how they're treated as that animal. So perhaps animal play can be a kink or a fetish. But... yeah, the animalistic behavior, the degradation of being an animal, all of these things can kind of play into the fetish around a specific animal. And again, this is very different than bestiality, which is non-consensual sex with an actual animal. We are not condoning that in any way. This is the accoutrements, the physical objects around specific animal play can be a turn-on for people.
Though pony play, I hear for a lot of people, is not about degradation. It can be like a pride and a...
Definitely.
Prettiness, yes. And a, like, oh, yes. Properness. I just wanted to
and
throw that
in.
And
just to paint the picture for you, some people who are into pony play, there's whole gatherings that happen when people are dressed up in saddles and harnesses and butt plugs with beautiful ponytails and their hair is done up and there's ribbons and they're put into carriages where they pull their dominance or their other people in carriages and they have races and they have specific ways that they move their legs to act out different pony walks. And it's a huge community and it's a big fetish for a lot of people. And right then, in that case, animal isn't about being degraded, it's about being celebrated and polished and presented with pride
and shown off,
right? And whereas being acted like, you know, a pig and thrown in the mud and, you know, pinched till you squeal, maybe has a little bit more of a different emotional overlay.
And of course there's going to be a range within each of these communities, but you get the idea.
Other really common ones include balloons. People love sitting on balloons, popping balloons, like rubbing up against lubricated balloons. As you mentioned, the furry community, which is an interesting one because some people love dressing up as furries in big, you know, these are like the big mascot animal costumes, and it's a very emotional thing and a very like a sexual orientation thing. And for other people, it's a very physical fetish and a very physically arousing, they want to have sex in furry costumes. So again, there's a spectrum within this individual community. Jewelry, really anything you can imagine has entered the fetish galaxy.
Yeah.
And I keep using this term fetish galaxy, but I think it's a useful image maybe that there's these big planets with huge foot fetish communities, and it is kind of this endless array of tiny planets and little twinkling stars, and it goes on forever and you can navigate your way around it. But I have yet to hear of something that really shocks me. Like the squishing burritos in sneakers was one thing that kind of was like, wow, that's really specific. I heard a story about another guy who hires sex workers to be put in casts and then navigate their ways around big cities. Like he'll fly someone to New York, put them in a full leg cast, and then loves watching them struggle on the subway steps. That's his sexual fetish. And I think when you're friends with sex workers, you hear a lot of great fetish stories, because a lot of people with very specific fetishes hire sex workers to enact these fetishes with them. Because sex workers often can offer these services without shaming, guilting, passing judgment. But so can the rest of us. And this is where I just want to end this podcast, is by talking about how we can shift our attitudes around fetishes to make it safer to talk about these unusual things that turn us on, and to integrate them into our sex lives in a way that doesn't completely disrupt your sex life, but enhances it. Add some energy, add some fun, add some variety and interest. Because I think when I guide couples in having this conversation, the first defensiveness that comes up is, well, does it have to be part of our sex life all the time? Like, do I always have to wear high heels and let him lick my toes? And that's not really what I want. And it's this fear of scarcity, this fear of losing what they already know and love into the unknown, that blocks this conversation from happening a lot of the time. So I think the first thing I want to say is start laying the foundation in your relationship to have these conversations in a way that feels safe and non-judgmental, right? Because if the perception is your partner is judgmental and fearful around sexual diversity and, you know, reacts with fear and judgmental around other people's sexual diversity, then it's not a safe place for you to come out as having a sexual interest that might deviate from the norm. So the groundwork, the foundation we all need to do is become more open-minded, more celebratory of sexual diversity. When we hear about other people's sexual interests, kinks, fetishes, we don't react with, ew, that's weird. Why would they be into that? Gross. Blech. What does that mean about them? But instead we react with, wow, that's really interesting. Tell me more.
I wonder what feels like it turns you on about that. Like, get curious.
Yeah, and be cool with diversity. Be cool with multiple forms of sexual expressions. That signals to your partner that it is safer and more okay to come out as really, truly who you are. And this idea of coming out to your partner, you might be married for 25 years and be holding back a desire and not fully revealing who you are as a sexual being. And I think this idea of coming out that we're borrowing from the gay and lesbian community is one that can apply to all of us. Like, what do you want to come out as? Do you want to come out as having a fetish? What do you need to reveal about your sexuality to be truer to who you are and more authentic? It's a lifetime process, I think.
I also think if you don't feel like you have any strong fetishes, it's also there's also something we can learn from these people who do have intense fetishes. Because if you think about this list, there's so many textural components that people have accentuated and gotten a real charge from. But I think the rest of us who don't have that could also start paying attention to all of these things with a little bit more awareness. Like,
what sparks any interest in incorporating in your sex life?
Or just get curious about it. It's like rubbing a balloon. Huh, next time I'm around a balloon, like maybe I'll just like pay attention to the contours of a balloon and notice how it feels on my fingertips. And do you know what I mean? Just like pay attention to our senses more.
Undressing my husband, and instead of throwing his scarf on the floor, his tie, you know, I'm going to take that tie and wrap it around his cock and have that texture of the tie incorporate into our sex play. And maybe that's going to be a turn on. or I'm going to use it as a blindfold. Like, start thinking about the objects around you as potential sources of interest and play. And maybe you discover something that's really fun for you.
Right. Or really look at that high heel. Like, how... Let me see how the curves are sexy, or how does the foot look in it, and how does it feel? There's just so much to learn from other people's turn on, and to explore expanding something we've never really paid that much attention to, and see what we notice about our own. Not that it has to become a really strong fetish, but just like it's a little gentle expansion of our own erotic interest and desire.
So you're becoming more open-minded and celebratory of sexual diversity. You're opening your own mind to what might turn you on. And then comes the hard part, which is talking to your partner and revealing a fetish and asking to incorporate it into your sex life. And I think the key here is to do it in a way that doesn't make what you're already doing wrong in any way, and is just an invitation to experiment
and explore
with the spirit of curiosity. So something like, you know, I've always been turned on by panties, and I'm really turned on when you wear your black silk panties. I really love the way they look on you. How would you feel if I tried them on one night?
I'm sort of curious about what they would feel like on me.
Or the other day I was getting really turned on and I found your panties in the wash and I picked them up thinking about you. And noticed how good they felt in my hand, and then I rubbed them on my cock, and I got really hard, and I noticed that that was a real turn-on. Like, would you be open to me trying them on sometime?
With you?
You know, and just see how that goes. And the other suggestion we always give around communication is, instead of making an I statement, I'm really interested in this, you can say, I was listening to this podcast or reading a magazine, and I read about a guy who was really into wearing his wife's panties. And they tried it out, and they both got really turned on by it. Have you ever heard of this before? And that's a gentler open, right? Like, making it not about you, but about the idea in general, and seeing how your partner reacts is a good way to test the waters. Because then their reaction feels less personal. But, however you open, I think suggesting ways that you can start exploring together that don't feel really threatening, that don't feel so out there that your partner feels lost. Because another reaction people have is, I don't know how to do that. My partner's really interested in something, but I have no idea how to begin. Mm. And people don't like feeling like novices in the bedroom. People don't like feeling like they don't have a map. And this is where we come in a lot of providing those maps, providing those templates. But making a very specific and contained suggestion about how you might begin together, right? So maybe it's not, I want to wear a full silk robe, panties, and put high on heels. Makeup and present myself to you in full transvestite regalia. And maybe it's, you know, I just want to rub your silk panties along my chest as we're having sex and feel that texture. Something like that. And start there, see how it goes, create a safe opening, create the opportunity for a victory, and then you can build on it from there.
And I think also having a conversation about what it means, because I think that some people will then, as we talked about, like worry that that means their partner's gay. But if you really feel sure in yourself that you're not, then also partners need to understand that and believe them.
And then it's working with your partner's boundaries, limitations, and their desires. Like, some women will be really excited about you licking and sucking on their toes. Others, there's no way their toes are getting licked. End of story. But maybe they're okay with you touching their toes.
Rubbing their feet.
Looking at their feet. Looking at their foot from across the room. Like, wherever they find that boundary, that's a good place to start. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing. I think it's really important to respect both people's interests and desires. And as we've talked, I've talked about the Venn diagram a lot of times in this episode, but it's such a useful tool. Finding that Venn diagram where your desires and their desires overlap, where you can both be authentically participating in the sexual exploration. You don't want to override any feelings of disgust or repulsion in order to accommodate your partner's fetish. You need to find that place where it's like, all right, I'm game to try. It doesn't turn me on, but I'll try it. or it kind of does turn me on and I'm excited to try it. Like, that's the sweet spot.
And sometimes the fetish itself won't turn you on, but seeing your partner get so turned on is really hot. And same so, way. Well, it's like, you can lick my feet. Like, I'm not that into that. Maybe, and maybe eventually you'll really get into the sensations of it, but seeing your partner be vulnerable and shy, but also excited and a little bit turned on and then a lot turned on and grateful that you're exploring and trying this, like, that whole range of emotions is really
yummy,
real and new and interesting and expansive and sexy, and seeing a partner really turned on is phenomenal. And yeah, so it's a beautiful, beautiful thing in life. So finding more sources that do that, that aren't that much effort for you and aren't your thing, can still create a beautiful experience. And
finally, if your partner comes to you with a fetish that does scare you or repulse you, I think you need to own those feelings as yours.
Uh-huh.
Instead of saying, you're disgusting for feeling that way, I can't believe you're into that, what does that mean about you? The proper response is something more like, I don't really understand that, I'm going to take some time to think about this.
I appreciate that you've been honest with me and shared something that probably felt scary to do. I'm glad we feel safe enough to do that.
Let's keep talking about other things that might turn you on, but that one I need to process for a little while. And then write to us. We love to hear from you at pleasuremechanics.com/hello. You can record us a message or send us an email. If you need support around your partner's fetishes, let us know and we will assure you or point you to resources that will help you understand it a little more.
Another question I really want to put out there for you to just keep asking somebody who is admitting a fetish or sharing is just, can you tell me more about that? Because asking more about what they're turned on by, why, what comes up for them, what are they, understanding it a little bit more makes it less scary and less bizarre or confusing or just a big question mark. When you get the real sense of why they think it's sexy, it can begin to make a little bit more sense and feel less scary.
I'm reminded of a conversation we had with a diaper fetishist once who came out to his partner. There was like a big fallout. And as they started talking, it was revealed that what he really liked about it was the physical sensations of the cotton padding of the diapers and the maternal, warm, erotic energy of being taken care of. And once his partner heard that side of the story, she could get on board. So you're right. Coming to some sort of understanding of what it means, what it looks like, what specifically, how it presents to your partner is a really good way to enter the conversation. Again, that spirit of curiosity. Tell me more. Why? What does that look like? Instead of, ew, no, I'm scared, I'm pulling away. Turning towards rather than turning away. So I know we've covered a lot. We're going to do a really awesome post with this podcast. So if you visit us at pleasuremechanics.com, go to the podcast page and find this episode. You can also find it in the sex index under fetish. You will have a whole list of questions to ask one another, a little script, some sample dialogues to have with your partner, because we really want to invite you into this process of coming out to your partner with your fetishes, whether they be light or intense, identifying things that turn you on and incorporating more creativity in the bedroom. And out of all of this, coming back to the beginning of the podcast, how can we all cultivate a sense of celebration, respect, and excitement around the true sexual diversity of human beings? And use that as a point of connection and a point of learning about not only tolerance, but excitement and celebration and inclusion and a sense of solidarity with one another so we can get through this politically challenged time together through celebrating fetishes.
Through trying to understand each other.
I'll be appearing on Fox News with this political thesis this week. But no, I actually do think it's important to use our sexuality as a point of solidarity and recognizing what we all have in common with one another and that we all have a stake in the same game together rather than a sense of exclusion and separation. Super important in the future of humanity, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com. Be in touch with us. We love hearing from you. Go to pleasuremechanics.com/hello and tell us about your fetish. We'd love to hear what turns you on. And
or how communicating with your partner has gone in disclosing a fetish that you've been holding on to for a long time. That is a very common experience for people.
Tell us your stories. We love hearing from you. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.